When it comes to civilian education system, the basic, intermediate, advanced courses, the foundations course, supervisor development course, the continuing education for senior leaders, we're really offering the Army a unique service as a very unique Army asset.
Hello and welcome back to Leader Up, a podcast of Army Management Staff College. Leader Up is a professional conversation where we discuss a broad range of leadership and leader development topics with an emphasis on the Army civilian professional. I'm your host, David Howie. And on today's episode of Leader Up, we are joined by the director of Army Management Staff College. This is Mr. Frank Wentzel, and he's going to talk to us today a little bit about kind of his thoughts about being in AMSC for the time that he's been here. And then we're going to talk about some policy changes and some other things that are going to affect you, those of you that are eligible to take the CES courses. We're going to talk about those things. And so, Frank Wentzel, thank you for joining us today on Leader Up. I look forward to this conversation.
Well, David, thank you. I'm happy to be here. And it's an interesting timing, just kind of wrapping up 2 years in the position. I think we did one of these podcasts early in my tenure. My, how things have changed, and very positive, and I appreciate the chance to talk about them for a few minutes.
And yes, you visited us about 6 months after you came into AMSC, and that is kind of the first thing I wanted to talk to you about is what you've seen, what you've heard, just maybe some anecdotal things that you've experienced from the outside that kind of shows us the value, the importance, and the relevance of the CES and Army Management Staff College.
I would love to. And part of that is as a result of the collective assessment we've done on what is our value to the Army, ensuring that what we do contributes to the civilian cohorts meeting the needs of the Army today and the needs that we know are coming in the future. Everything we did, we got here 6 months ago, we put on the table and took a look at and said, okay, what is it the Army tells us to do? What is it we're directed to do? Of course, what is it we're resourced to do? And of the myriad of things that we're doing that aren't necessarily specified and we haven't been told to do, but they're valuable, and so we wanted to invest and continue doing those. I'll use an example, one of these being this podcast. It was one of the many things we looked at and said, okay, the Army hasn't actually told us we need to do a Leader Up podcast. And honestly, we're not resourced for it. You know, we've got extra man hours we can utilize. What I found with this podcast, this is why I'm so glad to be back here, making my initial trips to D.C. and spending office time with some of our stakeholders who, let's be honest, are, you know, political appointee level. You know, we have some stakeholders who are at the very small circle of senior leaders of our Army. And casually, not me asking, casually, folks would mention, well, I was out taking my jog this morning and I popped in your latest podcast and talked about this. Okay, flashing green light went off in my assessment of what brings value to our Army. David, if what you're doing here is reaching that level, you know, the guest list you've had of, you know, CG CAC, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, this is value added to our Army. You know, some of these didn't require a lot. Other things we honestly just stopped doing. You know, we had to. We'd like to just do more and more and more, but we had to decide where to invest. I'm happy to say that by and large, the assessment of the value to AMSC, an irreplaceable part of the civilian cohort's leader development, enabling our Army to fight and win our nation's wars, provide the needs of the combatant commander in a timely fashion. Without the contribution of our leaders, supervisors that we educate at various points during a career, the impact on readiness, we could quantify it, but we won't make that the subject of what we have here. Happy to see that our courses continue to be, based on student feedback, the highest rated across the learning enterprise. Just routinely see that. I'm always glad to give that kind of feedback. What I'm also interested in is feedback from the supervisors of our students when they return back to their duty assignment. And we're working to formally be able to capture this, like the survey of the Army Learning Enterprise and other tools at our disposal. As always with these, the question sounds very easy. Well, what do their bosses say when they get back? actually getting that kind, when you get to the experts who administer these kind of surveys, as always, there's more to it than I first estimated. But we'll get there, and we'll have it. Informally, the feedback I get is outstanding, and we just want to build on those successes. The center of gravity for all of it, it really comes down to our faculty. That's what Forward faces with our students. And if we did a Clausewitzian analysis, there's no doubt that's where it comes to. I mean, everything gets to the tip of a spear is what happens in those seminars with those supervisors who are entrusted to us for a few weeks by the Army to ensure that they get the necessary learning that is asked for by their bosses when they return. The way we do that is constant assessment, like I was talking about earlier. Right now, we're doing a rework of our civilian leader requirements map. It's complex. But what it boils down to is, again, we look at what has the Army asked us to do through seminal documents, doctrine, DOTIs, things that, no kidding, this is well thought out, and the Army has told us, here's what a civilian at certain grades need to have. We map that in great detail down to the lesson plan and sometimes the slide level to ensure that we're imparting that to our students while they are here. Everything we do feeds off that baseline. What are we going to teach and why, and what are the outcomes we need to have when a student departs? That also extends to not only what happens in the classroom, but things like this podcast that I talked about. We're starting a civilian, we have yet to get a formal name, but I'll just call it a civilian leadership journal, and bringing back something that, we'll have contributing authors, and Mr. Thompson and I are working an article for the inaugural issue. We have faculty members who are writing input for issues that'll come in the out months. So we will have both executive level input as well as rubber meets the road. Okay, here's what we're seeing in the seminar, and we need to emphasize and bring out and draw this out. You know, what does it mean to be a member of the profession? Civilians are, but what are the differences and nuances that have to do with? Why do we teach what we teach? What is CES? Where does it fit in a developmental pathway? All these kind of things will be addressed in our journal that you'll start to see mostly in e-format, second quarter of 25. So we're well on the way to making that one happen. All still, the bedrock being the foundations, basic, intermediate, and advanced courses offered in three modalities. I mean, the resident course at Fort Leavenworth here is the flagship, and that resident experience is extraordinarily highly rated. But we also take the mobile education teams to the point of need. And we will have mobile education teams for the advanced and intermediate courses at a variety of locations. You can see them on Chartis coming to Fort Liberty in December with the IC. For an example, I mean, these are available to students not only locally there, but regionally to be able to sign up and not have to travel as far from home station for those that fits their needs. The fully virtual experience for those who, for personal reasons, coordinated with their supervisor, just can't leave. And so they need to take it in a fully virtual modality. But again, the flagship one, if someone asks me, hey, which one's going to do the mostest for me and the bestest, that being the resident. And we'll talk in a few minutes a little more detail on the blended options.
So let's talk about some of the policy, the external things that have been given to AMSC to do. There's three major policy changes that affects CES, and can you just go into what those three are and then kind of why those are being done and what the impact of those might be?
Yeah, absolutely. The Assistant Secretary of the Army for Manpower Reserve Affairs, Dr. Schaefer, recently signed the three new policies August 12th, I believe it was, and these have been quite well received by the field, partly because of a lot of hard work that's been done listening to the field and socializing these as we saw them as emerging requirements a year ago for the betterment of the development of our civilian cohort. The first one being, I'll just start with one that is basically done, eliminating the equivalent constructive credit option for the civilian education. A little background on what this was. For those who don't know, it basically says those who had graduated from certain PME courses, for instance, Command General Staff College, the Warrant Officer Career College, the Sergeant Major Academy. Decision was made years ago in the mid to late 80s, and it had to do with fiscal considerations. When AMSC was started in 1987, CES was just getting underway, looked at the number of students who would have to attend their grade requisite course, the numbers were just too big, and realized we will never get what was tagged a backlog through. So the solution was made, well, okay, those newly hired civilian supervisors who were graduates of these PME courses, we'll just give them credit. And as many decisions are done for fiscal reasons, it was accepted and got us through some many early years of the wickets. But as time went on, we started to realize collectively that maybe we're not doing the best for our cohort and for the Army at large by granting that credit. So we took, number one, a look at the outcomes of those courses that we were granting equivalent credit for. For instance, CGSC. The most common form of equivalent credit was the CGSC graduate who later is hired in as a, let's just say, GS-13. So he's now a brand new supervisor of civilians. I can use myself as an example. War College graduate, my first job was a GS-14. I found out this equivalent credit thing existed, and I took it. Why wouldn't I? This is in 2008. Good to go. I quickly realized that was a mistake. And I came on the job, and I had two subordinates who fortunately took care of their supervisor and taught me what it meant to be an Army civilian, and specifically to be a Army civilian supervisor of civilians. I had never heard of merit system principles. If it weren't for those two who trained up
right
their supervisor, and that's not the way it should work. I mean, you know, we're saddling my subordinates with teaching me how to be their boss. We can do better, and we are now by taking that option off the table. But we didn't just do it because of anecdotal evidence I just cited. We looked at the outcomes of CGSC and the outcomes of the CES advanced course. To nobody's surprise, they aren't the same. And if they were the same, obviously the question is, why do we need both courses? Well, the enterprise leader of the CES-14 versus the field grade knowledge that we expect as an outcome of CGSC, they do not match, and good that they don't. So that automatically feeds, well, then why are we giving credit, you know, someone like me who gets credit for his experience when we just established is not the same. So the response to the change in that policy has been, I've been impressed, extremely positive, because basically, you know, it's tough. We're saying, hey, newly graduated lieutenant colonel, seat of U5 Sergeant Major, 3 years ago, you didn't have to come to CES, but now you are. I was interested to see how this would play out. It has been a win. Those professionals who come in as new members of our cohort bring with them the wealth of, in most cases, two decades of experience. What they are bringing into our seminar environment is irreplaceable. It is positive. It is valued by their classmates. What I also see, based on feedback from those same individuals, by the time their experience is done in CES, they're leaving here, well, what do you know? I'm now an Army civilian professional. I understand this isn't the same. And I have a unique new set of skill sets that I can bring to my senior organization. So that one has been just a plus. And it's basically, that one's enacted. It's done. There just is no more equivalent credit. And we've had a couple months of seeing this play out, and it's been great. The second one, auto enrollment, essentially when a supervisor is named a supervisor for the first time, they are going to be automatically enrolled in their grade requisite CES course for 3 years down the road. So if you've got a, you know, GS-12 brand new supervisor, they're going to come to the resident course here at Fort Leavenworth in 3 years. Now, the idea being, they know that's out there. They're going to come here, but they have time with their supervisor to work out, you know, I think in our workload, it makes more sense that I go in 2 years. I'm not ready now. I need a little bit of experience under the belt. So I have a little bit of, you know, proper point of reference and skill set to take what they're going to impart me in CES. So I'd like to go in 2 years. They can schedule it out. It goes in their IDP. They enroll in CES and whatever modality fits their timeline. So the fact that they were going to come here in 3 years, that they're already done before it gets here. That one's getting well received by the field, and we'll see. It'll take a couple years till we see the bow wave of that coming in. Now, those who want to change it, I'd recommend those plan it out very well, because the backstop is if someone wants to change their auto-enrolled resident course attendance, which they're going to be put in 3 years down the road, it's going to require the first GO or SES in their chain of command to get on board with that change. So it's not something to be taken lightly if someone can't meet their requirement to be here. But the best thing is to work with your supervisor and front load that thing on your personal timeline. More details on the Chartist website for either one of those, and I urge you to burrow in there and see. You know, for instance, special cases. Okay, well, I'm in my probationary period. That's how you define a new supervisor. We're using those in their probationary period. Someone who's in their probationary period for 1 year right now with this new policy, how does it work for me? I urge you to burrow into Chartist. Individual cases of what could be timing when are myriad, but we'll do the right thing by everybody. The final one is quota management. And I don't want to bash the way we've done things, because all the decisions made for how we got here were well-intentioned by folks who were doing the absolute best for the Army at that point of time. So I don't, it's easy to sit here now and look back and say, well, whoever those now retired individuals were decided that, that's not what we're dealing with. Quotas made sense at a certain point before automation was as advanced and prevalent as it was now to guard certain numbers of seats for certain commands. So for instance, ForceCom would have 10 seats to use for an intermediate course in February. If they wanted to put in 13 students, we can guarantee 10 because that's their quota. The other three would have to go on a wait list and they wouldn't be guaranteed a seat until 45 days out. In the meantime, another command, for reasons that make perfect sense, they couldn't fill their quotas. Maybe they had a massive exercise going on at Paycom at the time and no one can go during the February course, but those seats were still blocked for those commands, even though they were not going to use them. Under the new quota management system, it's first come, first serve. If there are seats available for a February course, for the intermediate course, and your supervisor agrees, you can sign up right now and you're going to get that seat, regardless of the fill in your commands. We're easing this in between now and a year from now, 1 October of 25, just so we don't radically change the system out of control. Quota managers are used to the old way of doing things. We're still easing into it, even though all the quotas now are centrally owned. We're still working with individual commands and allowing them to fill up the seats that they were expecting through the FY. It's just the timing of when the policy was signed. We didn't want to radically change it too fast. All three of these policies, we see very positive impact coming. Number one, to make sure we don't have empty seats, even though we have students who want to get in. That's the quotas. Number two is just automatically enrolling new supervisors into the course. So it is going to happen. They're going to come. And that is an Army requirement, that supervisors have to take their grade requisite CES.
It's in 350-1.
Exactly right. So that's not new. This is just a way of saying it. We're just set up some timelines. And finally, elimination of the equivalent and constructive credit, which again has been very well received with what I've heard from the field and what I've seen in the seminars. So all very positive.
And those first two, the equivalency and the auto enrollment, those kind of tell us that if you're going to be a leader in the Army Civilian Corps, we want those people that raise their hand and ask for that to have a common experience. It's something that I've seen or I've heard kind of anecdotally is that when people come through a CES course and they go back to work, they find that there's some common language where they can communicate. When you start talking about MBTI, Myers-Briggs type indicator types, the other personality instruments that we do, levels of listening, things like that, people will say that. And if you've been through a CES course, you know what's being said, you know what's being talked about, and it allows people to talk in ways that makes the communication, I'll say, sharper, clearer, perhaps more intimate also.
Yep. David, I agree. I haven't taken MBTI years ago. When I'm in with a seminar, I explain basically the same thing to them. It has influenced how I view team building. And the fact that someone else has a different personality, and now in this position that I'm at with a larger organization, some folks are divergent thinkers. Some folks are ESTJ. Some folks are more convergent thinkers. We need both and all as part of the team in order to make sure we're producing what the Army needs. at, okay, how do I use the divergent thinkers when it's time for whiteboard? Hey, how do we get to this thing that we want to improve and get to? But then not expecting those divergent thinkers to be on the other end of the spectrum and say, okay, now let's form a spreadsheet of how we're going to actually enact and do the thing on what date to get there. The convergent folks can't bring us the blank whiteboard. It doesn't mean one is better than the other. It means we need both. And to recognize we got friction in the group. No, you don't have friction. We've got the potential that this needs to be harnessed and channeled, and we can be far better than we were. I mean, that's kind of how I view diversity as well. If you surround yourself with a bunch of folks who think like you do, everybody thinks they're brilliant, and then you wonder why the implementation just didn't work. Well, it's because we all sat in a circle and nodded and all think we're brilliant, but we weren't influenced by, okay, there are different ways to look at this in this big organization, not only internal to AMSC, but as the Army as a whole, which we are uniquely charged to shape and support, as you pointed out. Okay, how do we develop during this time so folks will recognize everyone doesn't have to view it the same way in order to still get an enacted plan and a way ahead that supports what our Army has asked us to do. That's the kind of skills we like to bring to our students.
Right, and that's the thing. And I taught in CES for a long time. I taught in the intermediate course, the basic course, and the advanced course. And that dynamic of here's a group of people, here's a problem, it's not real clear. Ill-structured, if you want to use that term, they figure out a way forward. It's not perfect. It may not even be what everybody likes, but it is a path forward that they've figured out. And that dynamic, I think, is very powerful in the workplace, which is just there's a problem. We always have the choice to roll around on the floor like a 5-year-old and cry, but that usually doesn't make that problem go away.
Yeah.
So I got to start engaging with people. And I think that's the value that I think CES brings, those kind of skills into the workplace.
Yeah, agreed. And then the ability for the leader to reach the point in their development to have that problem presented and through skillful leadership, get folks to realize, okay, here is a solution. And to take ownership of that solution to the point where they are passionately working on bringing about the change that is necessary to the point where after a while, you can't tell whose idea it was because everybody who's involved in it is just like, hey, I believe in this. I'm invested. I have a stake in this thing versus, well, the boss told me to do it.
Right.
There's a time and place you have to do that. If the building's on fire, we get out.
Right. Yes.
But when it's, you know, more, okay, this is a wicked problem. How do we get to the point where nobody's going to react to the point of running out of a burning building when it's like this is complex and difficult and, you know, knocks over some rice bowls that people may perceive, but we can still reach the point of having everybody on board and row in the same direction. Sometimes when true success, it gets to the point, like I said, everybody gets to the point where you'd think it was their idea to begin with.
Right.
Yep.
And so let's talk about some of the things that we have done, AMSC has done internally to meet the needs of the Army. And one of those is the blended curriculum. Talk a little bit about what that's going to look like, some of the reasons for it.
Yep, I'm happy to. And I'll use broad strokes in the description because we're still working through some details as we finish up pilots, but basically, I'll just use the advanced course as an example. The 4-week advanced course will transition to 2 weeks of resident, 2 weeks of virtual. The same thing with the METS. 2 weeks would be meeting and 2 weeks virtual. So that instead of coming together for 4 weeks, whether it's resident or at a mobile education team location, we'd split it in half. Fiscal considerations certainly were a huge driver on this. I mean, it's just shepherding the Army's precious resources. Secondly, demand signals from the field. I mean, using the advanced course as an example, I mean, it's tough to have GS-14s away for 4 weeks. So combining those together and also determining, yes, indeed, we have confirmed we can reach our learning outcomes, what the Army asked us to do by using a blended option. So far been very popular. We're working with students as, you know, individual case. Overseas ones present some unique challenges that we're still mapping through. But seeing it very well received and, you know, as we've gone through the implementation. So I think that will continue.
And this, and the sequence of that one more time is?
2 and 2 for the advanced course. The jury is still out which is going to be virtual and which is going to be blended first and second, leaning towards the resident portion first and then moving to the virtual. But they're, we're still conducting pilots, and I'm going to get some decision briefs here pretty quick, but it's leaning that way.
And the faculty, the facilitators that are with the students, ideally would be the same.
Yeah, absolutely throughout. Right. Absolutely right. Yep. And I've been pleased so far with what I've not only heard as feedback from the departments, but also myself. You know, I try to pop into a couple seminars a week, and it has really amazed me how seamless it seems to be that folks are moving from one modality to another, but still maintaining that level of trust and intimacy, if I can just pick those words. But I think it's a reflection more of folks are more comfortable working in a, you know, blended type environments than we might have seen 10 years ago. Virtual now and, you know, use of collaboration via Teams and Blackboard is common and done in all phases of their work. So it's normal. So that may be part of the biggest difference is we're not bringing up anything foreign and new.
And then the intermediate course then would be?
2 and 1, yep.
So two weeks resident and then 1 week virtual?
Right, right. And same thing. They're in the same throes of working out myriad details, but these are indeed details. I mean, it's gone very well, and we're just working out nuances of, okay, what happens with the individual student who's traveling from Camp Zama, Japan? How do they transition from a resident to a virtual with all the 15 hours of time zone and being back to work Monday morning online? We'll get there, and it won't torpedo anything. It's just details that we're working through, you know, real-life implementation.
And then, as you said earlier, we still offer the all virtual format for both. So yep. I can also choose then to attend 4 weeks in a completely virtual, as we're doing now, or 3 weeks if it's the intermediate course.
Yep, that is certainly available, and it is the same faculty, that same world-class curriculum that is so highly regarded. I again, pop into the virtual courses just as much as the others. And I just tip my cap to our faculty. I mean, we may overuse the term world-class sometimes, but it fits. I'm just in awe of the people I get to work with. Because some folks, virtual is all that works. You know, we have individuals, and they are indeed a GS-12 supervisor, but their PD requires no travel, and they don't travel. And for personal reasons, they just can't get away. You know, they have another responsibilities to the farm in the evenings that they must do. Well, that's why the virtual is there. The Army still wants to invest in those individuals, and their supervisors have totally put them on that track as far as their traveling hours go. Well, we can accommodate that. And both are in well demand. I mean, October classes are filling up well. And I'd urge folks to get on and look at those modalities that are available for those who have a CES in their future to get signed up for those courses as the year rolls on, because the demand is high, as it should be, but it's a quality product.
The other topic I wanted to talk to you about is the phase ones of the intermediate course and the advanced course, and just what's happening with those, and why did we make that decision?
Yep. The phase ones, in accordance with instructions that we know has gone out for PME, phase one, basically the box of books, prerequisite type work, things that must be done before you start your actual CES experience, they're as good as gone. I mean, they're if you're coming here in for a November course, there is no phase one. It's just eliminated without any degradation of the outcomes. And we've done invisible to our students constant modifications of curriculum deliberately so that all outcomes are still met. But those things that were expected to be done before you get here are no longer part of the package. So essentially, when you register for a course in February, your prerequisite is that you're in the appropriate grade. Supervisors have in priority, but if we have seats, we'll take non-supervisors who aspire to be supervisors. So the pre-work that must be done is just come willing to learn and be developed. And that's been very well received as well, because it was a challenge for folks to work around their regular job, or they're getting their boss to give them time to do those things before they arrived.
That's kind of a responsiveness back to our audience, to our customers, about the volume of that mandatory training, computer-based training, things that people frequently express some dissatisfaction. It's a way to try to answer the mail on those kind of concerns.
You are absolutely right. And we've all felt those. Right. You know, it's,
yes.
And so we know that, okay, we can do our part and make sure that our experience during the course, it is intense. It is driving. Folks are surprised how much they're investing and invested in during the experience. We maximize every single hour to reach those desired outcomes without saddling them with work they must get done before they get here, because they have a regular job,
right?
No doubt.
And this decision, this was a TRADOC decision that was a directive to PME, and we chose to see that as a statement of intent. So we did it voluntarily. We chose to follow that pattern on our own as a way to be responsive back to the organization.
Yeah, David, no one stuck their finger in my chest and said, "Hey, do this." But it's clear from attending meetings at Army University and being a full member of the team. Okay, I see and hear what's going on and the level of interest this has, and obviously we're going to be part of that. So you're absolutely right. Just responding to what we were seeing proactively.
And so people who are registering for our quote unquote phase twos now, the resident course, we won't call them phase twos anymore, but a resident course, their phase one status is really no longer relevant.
That's correct.
To registering for the resident.
Yep, that is correct. Yep. Yep. Very true.
Is there anything else about those topics, those two, about the blended courses or the phase ones that you want to add to this conversation?
There is one thing I'll bring up, and we are very pleased. The basic course, which is, had gone totally asynchronous virtual several years ago for fiscal reasons, and it's just the reality we live in. Yet this was our highest rated course by far. And all of our courses are, again, we're very high, and I'm quite satisfied with our outcomes and performance. But the basic course led them all. However, we were forced to kind of put that in a box and it's totally asynchronous experience. We had long wanted to be able to bring this back. This is an audience of first-time supervisors, many of whom this is their first time being in charge of anything. Hopefully they had good role models and their on-the-job training had been good, but really needed the investment of the enterprise to help them understand what right looks like. And that's part of the reason I think it was so highly rated, is the students that were leaving, this is the first time they had ever experienced, the attributes and competencies that AR-622 says you need to develop in yourself as a leader, and here's how you inspire performance of your subordinates. It just blew them away. So to be able to bring the basic course back as a resident experience, which I see that coming in the second January, February, March of a calendar year 25, we'll see that come back. The way we're able to do this is by divesting from phase one, a little bit of internal laundry here, the man years it took to maintain the phase one curriculums for the intermediate and advanced courses, we were able to use those highly qualified individuals who had a track record of being involved in the basic course, as they're basically now the faculty for this resurgence of the basic course instead of doing the phase one maintenance and work. So a win-win. It basically no cost or additional man hours billed to the Army by repurposing that. And boy, our payback to the Army by investing in those first-time junior supervisors, I have no doubt, as we look back on that, it'll pay off tremendously when we have a chance to look at the data.
That's excellent. I'm really glad to hear that, and I know the folks out in our audience will be glad to hear that the basic course is coming back.
It is.
And CES will be offering the basic course. And as you said, it let's look at maybe sometime early or later in the spring of 2025 to start seeing information about when I can enroll, or when I can get my people to enroll.
Absolutely right. And as I kind of stomped my foot a moment ago, I am absolutely certain that supervisors who send their first-time junior subordinate supervisors will be very glad they did. It will pay off for years to come.
And all of these things that we've talked about today, there's a monetary piece, a fiscal piece. We're trying to be good stewards of the resources that we get. And you've said it several times. We are listening to the needs and concerns of our customers, of the students and their organizations that want their people to get their CES, but at the same time, there is an investment in time to give people the time to go do their CES.
David, that's exactly right. And to arrive at that point, we do, you know, data analytics, analyze data. We're just looking at numbers. Well, how many students on the wait list drop off when they get a late seat assignment? We look at the data hard, and that drives our decisions. That we also take feedback from our senior stakeholders. Let's just face it, in our cohort, they're as senior as you get when you get up to the top of the grade charts. We also interested in that, as you mentioned, feedback from the field. Every week, I will get something that one of the departments send me. By and large, it's great stuff, but I also key in on the other ones that, hey, have you thought about this? We take all this into account in making the adjustments that I've spoken of in the last few minutes, all with an eye towards meeting current and future needs of the Army. That's why we're here and what we're about, because only AMSC does this. When it comes to civilian education system, the basic intermediate advanced courses, the foundations course, supervisor development course, the continuing education for senior leaders, we're really offering the Army a unique service as a very unique Army asset.
And is there anything else that you'd like to add about AMSC or just the time that you've been in the organization before we start closing this podcast down?
I'll just say to everyone out there, if you have been to CES, you know what I'm talking about. I don't need to convince you. It's a fantastic developmental experience. If we were in a civilian organization, we'd be looking at corporations spending thousands of dollars to invest in their people. And that is really what the Army is doing, to send a clear signal to our students and their supervisors of how valuable that is. I invite anyone, TDY here to Fort Leavenworth, whatever leader capacity you want to come by for a visit and see firsthand what we do, absolutely. We'll be able to straighten that out, and it'll help folks realize the value of what we bring to the Army. Firmly believe in it. Great organization. Fantastic mission that we've all bought into. That's why two old guys like us are sitting here still doing this, right, David?
Absolutely.
And that really is because of the people. There are a group of folks here at AMSC who are so committed to this mission and educating the civilian workforce for what the Army needs. It just blows me away. I can't take a walk down the hallway without encountering that passion when I come across any member of the staff or faculty. It's a great organization to serve in because of what we do for our Army.
And so, Mr. Frank Winsell, I want to thank you for giving your time today to come and be a guest on Leader Up and talking about these things. And also for your very kind words when we first started about this podcast. Thank you for passing that on. I appreciate it very much. And I know Steve, my producer, and Chad Cardwell, who's not with Leader Up anymore, also appreciates those. And I just want to tell you personally, I appreciate very much your leadership style. You have provided the leadership to AMSC in the almost 2 years that you've been here, exactly what I thought we needed when you came in. In my view, you focus on the right things, and you talk about those right things in the right way to us. And it's made me reinvigorated to be part of Army Management Staff College since you've been our director. So thank you for that.
Well, David, obviously appreciate that feedback, but the only reason it works is because of you and Steve and Chad and Bob and everyone on the team. What a great family. Thanks for the opportunity. Appreciate you spending this time with you this morning.
Thank you, sir. We do appreciate it. And so, Leader Up audience, what did you hear today from Frank Winsell about Army Management Staff College? Maybe something you need to act on. Are you auto-enrolled? Did you get auto-enrolled because you accepted a supervisor position? If you did, get that CES course scheduled. Get it on your personal calendar and your professional calendar and get it done, and encourage others to do the same. If you want to find out some details about some of these things that we talked about, go to our website, because we'll be filling in the details of some of these initiatives in the coming weeks and months. And as always, keep listening to Leader Up and subscribe to us. And join us again next time for another edition of Leader Up.
As always, if you have any questions or feedback or would like to learn more about our podcast, please check the description for our email and for our website. Thanks for listening.